Hey, Ted. Great to talk to you, man.
Glad to be here, Ed. My pleasure.
Well, we are talking today about retainer agreements. And as usual, before we get to the topic and the questions I have for you, why don't you tell us a little bit about your business, the kind of clients you work with, the type of work you do, those types of things.
Sure. Sounds great, Ed. So I've been in business for about a year and a half now as a full-time freelancer, and I'm a B2B content marketer focusing primarily on the financial services industry. So specifically what that means is I write white papers, case studies, bylined articles, and blog posts for companies that serve the credit union and banking sectors. So my clients include technology vendors, consultants, and information and content providers largely. And then I do have a few clients who are a little bit outside of financial services as well, such as in nonprofit, service and academia.
Okay, super. So let's talk a little bit about the retainer agreement opportunities that you've been able to secure. And we could even go, I know you've had a couple, but there's one that you've had, if I understand correctly, it's kind of like the main one that's been the biggest one and the longest term that you recently secured a few months ago. So maybe let's focus on that with these questions, and then if you want to bring elements of others, that's cool too. But let's talk about with that particular opportunity. So how did it present itself? Who approached whom? What was the initial discussion like, and so forth?
Sure. With this particular client, it really seemed like the natural next step in our partnership. They were an existing client, which I think is really important, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But I've been working with them for about 6 months when this retainer opportunity came up in conversation. So over that time, I'd done a couple of big projects for them, two white papers in particular. And we had developed a good comfort level with each other and a level of trust. I knew how they worked. I knew what their expectations were. I got to know my two key contacts there pretty well. And they got to know me as well, and they learned that I deliver a good product on time and as requested, and they kind of understood where my skills and my talents lied as well. So, like I said, it really seemed like the natural next step. And with this client, they're I guess still on the small side, but they're a rapidly growing startup technology vendor, so they have a huge need for content. They provide expensive cloud-based bank operating systems to financial institutions. And so over that 6 months that I worked with them, I had established myself quickly as their go-to freelance writing resource, particularly for white papers focused on the credit union niche. And my contacts there recognized that based on the work I had done with them, those couple of projects, that I may be able to help them in some other areas as well, just based on my experience, including white papers and articles to reach the broader enterprise level and community banking sectors. So, beyond the very narrow niche of credit unions that I started with them. So the whole retainer thing came up for a couple of reasons. They wanted to give me some additional work. And then they also had one of their key internal marketing folks happen to be going out on maternity leave very soon within the next couple of months. So they had a little bit of a resource gap, and they were hoping that I might be able to backfill some of her content responsibilities, at least for that period of time while she was gone, but also on sort of a temp to perm basis, because there was some discussion that her responsibilities might change a little bit when she came back. So that was sort of the background, that comfort level of working with me and me working with them and some of these internal needs that they had. And so this was around August of last year that we started having conversations about potential retainer. Their VP of marketing was one of my two main contacts there, and he threw out the idea of, potentially putting me on a contract for work for the remainder of 2015, the last 4 months, and then a 12-month monthly retainer for all of 2016.
Okay, so it came from him, and I'm curious, what do you remember what kind of language he used? You threw out a term there, like a contract. I forget what you said, but is that
how
you refer to it?
Yeah, well, it was kind of two pieces. So just based on the timing, you know, we had a few discrete projects they wanted to have completed for 2015. So we talked about not doing that as a retainer per se, but just sort of contracting for those very specific projects on a, on a fee basis. But then looking out for this year, the 12-month period of 2016, and that's where we would put in place a monthly retainer agreement.
Gotcha.
So
So
we used kind of both terms in that conversation.
So it sounds to me like, so it came from them, but not only was the work escalating, right, in your relationship with them growing, the trust level growing, but it seems like one of the things that precipitated this was this key person leaving, going out on maternity leave. So that was going to create another big gap. And they just saw the huge need. They saw you growing with them, and it just made a lot of sense for them to approach you with it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and what was cool, and what was kind of cool about it too was, as I alluded to, they saw potential there for, you know, the type of working I was doing in this narrow niche, being translatable to some other projects that they had in some other, even larger target sectors that they are going after. And I think that's one learning as well is, you know, not to, you know, try to avoid getting pigeonholed. You know, prove yourself within, you know, one area of work or one particular target audience for a client. But especially if it's a bigger company, they're going to have multiple industry sectors or client types that they're going after. Be open to that. You know, don't be afraid of trying something new or expanding your own knowledge base and going beyond your own direct experience to help your customer out.
I think it's great advice. It's great advice. We do get pigeonholed many times as creative professionals, right? They hire you for something, and they see you as a person who does just that one thing,
right?
Or that
right.
has that topic expertise, and that's it.
Exactly.
I'm curious when they asked you about this. It sounds like they kind of kept it in general terms, right? So I'm assuming they didn't ask you, "Hey, how can we buy more of your time, or can we buy a block of hours?" Or what I heard you say is they just introduced it in broad terms. Say, you know, can we maybe take a look at some sort of longer term work agreement? Is that accurate?
I think so. With that initial conversation, anyway, so they kind of broached that, said, "Hey, you know, we'd like to, we'd like to kind of lock you up and, you know, on a longer term agreement. Here's some things that, you know, we should talk about." And then we agreed to kind of sit down a couple of weeks later and have a more formal discussion about that. So in that more formal conversation is where we got into some of the specific projects and deliverables that they were looking at, where they thought I'd be able to help. So the type of projects we talked about were, one, a monthly bylined article, which was one of the content responsibilities of the woman who was going out on maternity leave that I would be taking over. And then a series of, you know, white papers, about a half dozen white papers through the course of the year. So those are like the two main deliverables. So once we sat down and had that conversation, it was pretty well defined, you know, what they were hoping to get out of me. And then it became a discussion of, okay, what would it take? You know, what would be, you know, the fees for each one of those projects, and then how can we package that together over the course of the year and break it down into a monthly retainer fee.
Okay. So let's talk about that. How did you structure the offering, the retainer package?
Right. So like I mentioned, you know, we had that phone conversation and the client had laid out roughly the number and types of writing projects that they were hoping to complete over that next 15 to 16 months. And in that conversation, we discussed the general pricing. And my client then asked me to kind of put together a proposal. And so my proposal was based on, you know, what they were looking to achieve, those deliverables that we talked about, and then kind of just, you know, adding up, you know, my total fees for all those projects over the course of a year, and then dividing that out by 12 to come up with our monthly installments. Interestingly, we also discussed kind of including a little bit of a slush fund in there to account for some additional projects that may pop up during the course of the year. So the actual monthly payment that we agreed upon was a little bit higher than strictly, you know, the dollar amounts, the fees for each of those discrete projects added up and then divided by 12.
Interesting.
Which was kind of nice. And that actually was their idea. And I think a lot of this, you know, what this comes down to is what they were hoping to get out of this retainer agreement, which was one, to kind of lock me up for the whole year and kind of have me on demand to do these projects. Mm-hmm. But then also from a convenience standpoint on their side, particularly from the VP of marketing, because he's an extremely busy guy, he's got a lot on his plate. They didn't want to have to come back to me, you know, every month or every quarter and say, okay, here's some of the projects we, you know, would like to engage you on. What are you going to charge us? How do you want to be paid? You know, can you fit this in? So it really became just a convenience factor for them of, hey, let's just lay this all out on the table now. We'll make a few assumptions. You know, we know we got about 90% of this figured out. You know, let's throw in a little bit of a slush fund for these other things that may come up during the course of the year. And if things don't 100% balance out at the end of the year, we can kind of, if we have a credit in our account, we could carry your work over into 2017. Or if we owe you a little bit of money, we can kind of balance up then. So I really liked some of those features and some, you know, kind of what they wanted to include in this agreement. But also, I think it was very favorable to them in terms of we didn't have to have ongoing negotiations and discussions around fees and deliverables. It was all pretty much laid out there up front. And basically, all of our conversations have been around specific projects rather than the fees and whether I'm available to do them.
So it sounds like from what you just described that you guys put together the list of deliverables, and it was very transparent in terms of how you were figuring out your fee, right? You listed it all, you added it up, and then you divided by the number, you know, by 12 months. Is that pretty much how it happened, so the client had full visibility into that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. And did you take any, like, did you offer or did they ask for any sort of, like, volume discount or a retainer discount on any of that? Or did you just pretty much just divide by 12 at that point?
Yeah, pretty much just divided by 12. So we had a little bit of negotiation on some of my fees, like on the white papers. They had proposed a little bit lower fee than what I was comfortable with. So we had a little bit of discussion about that. But then actually on the articles, they proposed a little bit higher fee than what I was going to, offer up to them. So I was very happy with that. So, and really there was no discussion of any discounts on that, based on the number of projects. So that all worked well. The only, I guess, area where I gave a little bit is, you know, we talked about sort of some add-on services around some of these projects. So I agreed to do a couple of webinars based on a couple of the white papers I would be doing during the course of the year. I agreed to go down to their annual conference. Basically, they would pay for me to go down to the annual conference, but I would participate and, you know, lead a seminar, a breakout session at the conference. So a couple of things like that, so that, you know, they didn't feel like I was nickel and diming them. And it was all part of sort of that, that growing relationship that we were developing.
Okay, so that wasn't a line item with a fee. You just kind of threw that in as a, hey, I'll go ahead and do this as well. Okay, that's fair. And then I'm curious, one little detail, and then we'll move on. But so you said that you proposed all these fees, but there's one where they actually threw in a number at you that would have been higher than what you would have quoted. How did that come about? Because typically, you know, you're the one proposing or listing all the fees. Is it so? How did they end up coming to you with that fee?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. So I was thinking back, trying to remember exactly how that happened. But, you know, I remember we had a little bit of back and forth on the, you know, on the white paper fees in particular, because we were a little bit off, and I stood my ground on that, because, you know, the fee that they were offering up was substantially lower than what I felt comfortable with. But then right after we had that discussion, we basically moved on to the next, the next project area, which were the articles. And I was ready to, you know, to put a figure out there. And I was expecting, again, to have a little bit of negotiation. And so they said, well, you know what, why don't we pay you this much per article? Does that sound fair? Mm-hmm. And I was a little taken aback, but that absolutely does sound fair. Let's go with that. So I think maybe they showed their cards a little bit too quickly, or they just didn't want to get into a whole, a second negotiation discussion at that point.
Okay. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And then I'm curious about your terms when it comes to the end of the year. So you mentioned that you're kind of take some sort of accounting at that point. And it seems like you have a pretty definite list that you're going by. And I'm curious what your arrangement is for carrying over or for overcoming that shortfall at that point. Did you specify that up front, or did you guys decide to work that out at the end?
Yeah, good question. It is specified in the agreement in general how that would be handled at the end of the year. And we don't really expect that it'll really come into play, because, as you mentioned, the deliverables are pretty well set out in the agreement. However, if time frame slipped, if I were to only complete 5 white papers instead of 6 this year, or for some reason only 10 articles instead of 12, basically the agreement stipulates that that would result in a credit balance in the retainer account, and I would agree to kind of just carry that over and continue the work into next year if there was any, you know, if I did not meet all the deliverables.
Yeah.
Similarly, if they had, approached me with several additional projects through the course of the year, where there was actually a debit balance in the retainer agreement, they would agree at the end of the year. And I forget exactly how it's worded, but I think it's like if it's less than $5,000, they would just kind of cover everything at the end of the year in one lump payment. If it was more than $5,000, it would be covered on a quarterly basis. So they would pay me quicker in that case. So, but it was all very, very fair, I thought, both to me and to them.
One thing that sounds that I like about this is you. Mm-hmm. So this seems like a very organized client, and I think when you have a client that's very organized, they're very clear about what they want to accomplish, and they, you know, that based on your experience with them, that you will get these things done. then I think you can afford to then offer that, right? My experience has been more with clients that are not as organized or a bit scattered. And then I don't allow for that option. I just basically say, look, we'll look at this monthly or quarterly, and then we can adjust as needed. You know, we can trade some things off if we're kind of coming into the fourth quarter and, you know, these things haven't been done. I'm not going to carry them over. I'm not going to do all this work in the fourth quarter because I just can't physically get it all done. But let's negotiate at that point. I can trade some things and that sort of thing. So if you were dealing with a different kind of client, I think you approach this the right way. So I'm curious, kind of wrapping up here, how has it been working so far now that you've been in it for a few months?
Well, it's been great. it's been a great relief to have one steady client locked up for an entire year who's providing roughly half of my target income goal for the year, and is actually equal to my entire income from my first year in my freelance business. So this, for me, this was a huge step forward. It's also fantastic to get a steady ACH direct deposited payroll, and I'm using air quotes, payroll check each month. And I didn't realize how much I missed that after leaving the corporate world, but it is a real nice confidence boost and stress relief to kind of have that coming into your checking account every month. Also, you know, I've been able to schedule my projects into my capacity planner months ahead of time because I know exactly what the deliverables are going to be with this one client. And then I can fill in with other clients' projects as they come along. And then I get, you know, lastly, and probably most importantly, the relationship with this particular client has continued in a very positive manner. I feel like I'm a real integral part of their team. And I feel very positive about where this relationship is headed in the future, and I'm hopeful it will continue past this current retainer agreement into next year.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, those are all great benefits. You mentioned some that I hadn't really thought about. And by the way, in let's say pretty much every industry, people move around. So this gives you an opportunity to develop relationships with people who, hey, you know, next year they might be somewhere else. And guess what? They might bring you in there and work out a similar agreement with you. So that's yet another client.
that's true. Yeah.
So I like it when people move. So one last question, Ted. What, based on what you've learned so far, is there anything you'd do differently next time you pitch a retainer agreement to a client?
Yes and no. I don't think I'd do anything different with this particular client. And, you know, that has to do with everything we discussed in terms of that trust, you know, their level of organization, how well we've been able to work together. And, you know, everything's been working out really well with them. And actually, it's, you know, I was fortunate because they prefer to work on a retainer agreement with a freelancer that they trust as well. So it's been really good. I will say, though, I've explored retainer relationships with a couple of other clients that have not panned out for a variety of reasons. One was for a more undefined scope of work. And it also was a client I had been working with for a while. And so we had some initial conversations, but, you know, we both weren't able to figure out how to come up with a fair monthly fee because the work volume and the type of projects were so varied. And as it happened, pretty soon after that conversation, my work with that client ended up drying up, really due to unrelated reasons, primarily budgetary on their end. And then secondly, and I think this is an important point, early on I had discussions with a new prospect that I was chasing, and this was early last year, about doing two blog posts per month for them for a set monthly retainer. And we got pretty far down the road and agreed on some pricing and deliverables and all that. Those discussions ended up not going anywhere. So kind of the main thing I learned from that is that you really need to have a track record and sort of that level of trust established with the client as well as a real understanding of their business before you even broach a retainer agreement. And I think that's important on both sides, both, you know, the trust level that they have in you, knowing how you work and what you can deliver, and then, you know, you even being comfortable to work with them. And I will not do that again. I will not try to establish any sort of retainer agreement with a new client until I have probably 3 to 6 months under my belt of working with them.
That is excellent advice, my friend. Well, Ted, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us when it comes to retainer agreements. Thanks for your insights. I truly appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ed. It's been great talking with you again.